Their parents named them May and June because their birthdays occurred in those months. May was like the time of year in which she had been born, changeable, chilly and warm by turns. In the 1930s, when May was in her 20s, it was still important to get one's daughters well married, and though Mrs. Thrace had no anxieties on that head for sunny June, she was less sanguine with regard to May. Her elder daughter was neither pretty, nor graceful, nor clever, and no man had ever looked at her twice. June, of course, had a string of admirers. Then May met a young lawyer at a dance. His name was Walter Simmons, and he was extremely good-looking. May fell passionately in love with him, but no one was more surprised than she when he asked her to marry him. The intensity of their passion frightened Mrs. Thrace. It wasn't quite nice. The expression on May's face while she awaited the coming of her fiancé, her ardour when she greeted him, the hunger in her eyes, that sort of thing was all very well in the cinema, but unsuitable for a civil servant's daughter in a genteel suburb. Briefly, May had become almost beautiful. June, who was clever as well as pretty, was away at college training to be a schoolteacher. It had been considered wiser, or long before Walter Simmons was thought of, to keep May at home. She had no particular aptitude for anything, and she was useful to her mother about the house. Now, of course, it turned out that she had an aptitude for catching a rich, handsome and successful husband. Then, a month before the wedding, June came home for the summer holidays. "It was all very unfortunate," Mrs. Thrace said over and over again. "If Walter Simmons had jilted May for some unknown girl, they would have been bitterly indignant, enraged even. But what could anyone say or do when he transferred his affections from the elder daughter to the younger?" May screamed and sobbed and tried to attack June with a knife. "We're all terribly sorry for you, my darling," said Mrs. Thrace. "But you have to face the fact that he's changed his mind. Isn't it better to find out now than later?" "I would have had him, though," said May. Mrs. Thrace blushed. "I shall never marry now," said May. "She's ruined my life." Walter and June were married, and Walter's father bought them a big house in Surrey. May never forgave her sister. Mr. and Mrs. Thrace were most careful never to speak of June in her presence. So May listened outside the door, and she secretly read all June's letters to her mother. She knew that they had moved to a much larger house, and she knew where they went for their holidays and what friends they entertained. But what she was never able to discover was how Walter felt about June. Had he ever really loved her? Had he repented of his choice? It comforted her. It was perhaps the only thing that kept her going, to convince herself that Walter regretted his bargain. Sometimes, after a letter had come from June, May would see her mother looked particularly pleased and satisfied. And then, shaking with dread, she would read the letter, terrified to find that June was pregnant. But Mrs. Thrace's pleasure and satisfaction must have come from some other source, for no children came, and now June was past 40. Trained for nothing, May continued to live at home until her parents died. And that was how it happened that May saw Walter again. At the time of her mother's cremation, May was ill with a viral infection and unable to attend. But she had no way of avoiding her father's funeral. When she saw Walter coming to the church, a faintness seized her, and she huddled against the pew rail, trembling. She covered her face with her hands to make it seem as if she was praying. And when at last she took them away, Walter was beside her. He took her hand and looked into her face. "Won't you come and speak to your sister, May?" he said. "Shall we let bygones be bygones on this very sad day?" May shivered as she withdrew her hand and marched to the back of the church. She placed herself as far away from June as she could get. But it was at a funeral that they were reconciled. May learnt of Walter's death through reading an announcement of it in a newspaper. And the pain of it was as great as that she had suffered when her mother had told her he wanted to marry June. She sent flowers, an enormous wreath of snow-white roses, and of course she would go to the funeral, whether June wanted her there or not. Apparently June did want her. Perhaps she thought the roses were for the living bereaved and not for the dead. She came up to May and put her arms round her, laying her head against her sister's shoulder in misery and despair. May broke their long silence. "Now you know what it's like to lose him," she said.
"Oh, May, don't be cruel to me now. I've nothing left."
So May sat beside June, and after the funeral she went back to the house where June had lived with Walter. In saying she had nothing left, June had presumably been referring to emotional rather than material goods. Apart from certain stately homes she had visited on tours, May had never seen anything like the interior of that house. 2 days later, there came a letter from June.
"Dearest May, don't be angry with me for calling you that. I can't be sorry for what I did, because so much happiness came of it for me, but I am truly sorry that you were the one to suffer. And now, I want to try and make up to you for what I did. Will you come and live with me? You are welcome to share everything with me. You will know what I mean when I say I feel that would be just. Please make me happy by saying you forgive me and you will come. Always your loving sister, June."
What did the trick was June saying it would be just? Yes, it would be justice if May could now have some of those good things which were hers by right and which June had stolen from her along with her man. She waited a week before replying. "Dear June, what you suggest seems a good idea. I will make my home with you. Let me know when you want me to come. It is raining again here and very cold. Yours, May." There was nothing, however, in the letter about forgiveness. And yet May, sharing June's house, was almost prepared to forgive, for she was learning at last what June's married life had been. "You can talk about him if you want to," she said hungrily on their first evening together. "If it's going to relieve your feelings, I don't mind." "What is there to say except that we were married for 40 years, and now he's dead?" "You could show me some of the things he gave you." May picked up ornaments, gazed at pictures.
"Oh, they weren't presents. I bought them, or he did."
"I wonder you're not afraid of burglars. Have you got lots of jewellery, too?"
"Not much."
May's eyes were on June's engagement ring. The poor thing of diamond chips in 9-carat gold, or far less expensive than the ring Walter had given his first love. "I should have thought you'd have an eternity ring."
"Marriage doesn't last for eternity," said June. "Let's not talk about it any more."
May could tell she didn't like talking about it. June shied at mentioning Walter's name, and she put away the photographs of him, which had stood on the piano. May wondered if Walter had ever written any letters to his wife. They had seldom been parted, of course, but it would be strange if June had received no letter from him in 40 years. The first time June went out alone, May tried to open her desk. It was locked. That night, May reread the 2 letters she had received from Walter during their engagement. Each began, "Dearest May." She hadn't looked at them for 40 years, but now she read them with calm satisfaction. May decided to start wearing her engagement ring again. If June noticed, she didn't remark on it.
"Was it you or Walter who didn't want any children?" May asked.
"Children just didn't come."
"Walter must have wanted them. When he was engaged to me, we talked of having 3.
June looked upset, but May could have talked of Walter all day long.
"He was only 65. That's young to die these days. You never told me what he died of."
"Cancer."
"Just like Mother," said May.
"Suppose June had had cancer and had died.
Remembering Walter's tender look and strong handclasp at her father's funeral, May thought he would have married her. She twisted the ring on her finger.
You were almost like a second wife, weren't you? It must be a difficult position.
I'd much rather not talk about it, said June, and with her handkerchief to her eyes, she left the room. May was happy, for the first time in 40 years. Sometimes she imagined Walter sitting in this chair or standing by that window, his heart full of regret for what he might have had. And she thought now, while he had been longing for her, she, far away, had been crying for him. She never cried now, though June did.
I'm an old fool. I can't help giving way. Oh, you're strong, May, but I'm weak, and I miss him so.
The strong and the weak. May remembered those words when a movement downstairs woke her in the night. She heard footsteps and the sound of a door being forced. She put on her dressing gown and went stealthily along the passage to June's room. The bed was empty. She looked out of the window, and the moonlight showed her a car parked on the gravel drive, which led down to the lane. The yellower, stronger light streamed from the drawing-room window. Before she reached the head of the stairs, she heard a violent crash. There was a cry from below, footsteps running. May got to the stairs in time to see a slight figure rush across the hall and slam the front door behind him. The car started up. In his wake, he had left a thin trail of blood. May followed the blood trail into the drawing room. June stood by her desk, which had been torn open and all its contents scattered on the table. She was trembling, tearful and laughing with shaky hysteria, pointing to the shards of cut glass that lay everywhere.
I threw the decanter at him. I hit him, and it cut his head and he ran.
May went up to her. Are you all right?
He didn't touch me. He pointed that gun at me when I came in. But I didn't care. I couldn't bear to see him searching my desk, getting at all my private things. Wasn't I brave, May?
But May wasn't listening. She was reading the letter which lay open and exposed on top of the paper the burglar had pulled out of the desk. Walter's bold handwriting leapt at her, weakened though it was, enfeebled by his illness. My darling love, it is only a moment since you walked out of the ward, but I can't resist an impulse to write now and tell you how happy you have made me in all the years we have been together. If the worst comes to the worst, my darling, and I don't survive the operation, I want you to know you were the only woman I have ever loved.
I wouldn't have thought I'd have had the courage, said June, but perhaps the gun wasn't loaded. Oh, would you call the police, please, May?
Yes, said May. She picked up the gun. The police arrived within 15 minutes. They brought a doctor with them, but June was already dead, shot through the heart at close range.
We'll get him, Miss Thrace, don't you worry, said the inspector. It was a pity you touched the gun, though. Did it without thinking, I suppose.
It was a shock, said May. I've never had a shock like that. Not since I was a girl.
May and June by Ruth Rendell was read by Julie T. Wallace and produced by Rosemary Watts.